This NFL season, all FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get 3 weeks of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. So if you've got a hunch, you can watch it come to life live, like a vibe hunch.
I don't like the way the quarterback is warming up. I don't like the way the running back is warming up. I definitely don't like the way the punter is warming up.
Put your hunch to the test this season with FanDuel. All customers bet $5 and get a 3 week free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Plus, new customers bet $5 and get 200 in bonus bets guaranteed. 21 plus and present in North Carolina. New customer offer. First online real money wager only. $5 deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets expiring 7 days after receipt. See terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. NFL Sunday Ticket offer from YouTube and YouTube TV ends 9/22/24. After 3 week free trial, the full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally. Cancel anytime. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. YouTube TV base plan required to watch YouTube TV. Redemption requires a Google account and current form of payment.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand.
There you go, Judy Garland. Shout hallelujah, come on. That is Judy Garland and Get Happy. The reason we're playing that is because Niall Kinsella told us that was what we should play. Niall Kinsella knows that that's what we should play because Niall Kinsella is going to be conducting the Irish Studio Orchestra this Wednesday in the National Concert Hall through... medley is probably the wrong term because I think that's rather short and this is going to be a full performance, but it's through an extravaganza of MGM show tunes, including that one now?
Yes, including that one. So what we have in store is basically a Yellow Brick Road tour through the MGM musicals. So we're kind of bringing in lots of these films. The challenge was what do we leave out, because we could probably have done two or three concerts with all the songs that we could have put in. So it was a really tricky one to what do we include and what do we not include.
Now, this is something of a tangent, but I've gone down a bit of a Wizard of Oz rabbit hole recently, so I wanted to run some things by you. Do you believe the theory that says that the entire Wizard of Oz was an allegory or a metaphor for the departure from the gold standard?
Oh, I don't know about that at all. I remember reading the book in college, and it was all, the kind of analysis of it was that it was all about commercialism. So, you know, the idea that the Oz was this green city, but it was green because of the green dollars. So,
and the theory is the Yellow Brick Road was the representative of gold. And
yeah. I mean, it could be. That's very, I don't know how much.
I have another one for you that you like. Do you know what the snow was made of in The Wizard of Oz? Because the scenes shot in snow. Do you know what they used as snow when they filmed?
No, I feel like I've not done my homework here.
Asbestos.
Oh,
yes.
God.
They danced and played in asbestos.
Oh,
and the
dear.
Logic was that if you used fabric, it would be flammable. Because, you know, if you're so, what's yes. non-flammable fabric? Well, you douse everybody in asbestos.
Oh, great.
It's quite the commitment to your art, isn't it?
Absolutely. The suffering that goes on to make a film.
Now, this goes to MGM and the things that they invested in making these films. How did all of this stuff and all of the value that was in it, how did it end up under a golf course?
Yeah, this is quite a shocking thing. Whenever I've said this to people, they just don't believe it. But basically what happened was in the late 60s, MGM ran into financial difficulty. They had lost a lot of money. By this time, the big lavish musicals had gone out of style. And they had a big corporate shakeup, and they got a new head of MGM to just shake things up and try and release some money, mainly from their real estate on the studios. So one of the things they wanted to do was to basically strip the MGM music library. The MGM music library at that point had about 3.5 million items in it. It's the largest music library in the United States, second only to the Library of Congress in Washington.
We're talking soundtracks, we're talking scores.
This specifically was the music scores. So the orchestral scores, the parts, so everything that, you know, musicians needed to perform. And
3.5 million of them.
3.5 million items. So this was every note of music that was in every MGM film, be it a musical or a non-musical. So they ordered that to be just completely stripped and sent to basically put in skips and sent to landfill. So as you said, you know, the handwritten orchestra score of Somewhere Over the Rainbow is buried somewhere under a golf course in LA. And these were treasures of music and film that were all completely irreplaceable.
The original score for Somewhere Over the Rainbow got put in a dumpster and then buried as landfill under a golf course.
Yeah, basically that's it. All of these things were handwritten in those days, and they represent, like, I don't know, thousands, tens of thousands of hours of people's time and creativity and craftsmanship. So they were all tossed away. They kept like a representative copy of each, like, say, film. They'd have maybe a reduced score. I think that was for copyright reasons. But often these, they weren't the full length score of the film. They were incomplete. They lacked a lot of detail.
But there must have been vast value in this. I mean, when Don McLean found the handwritten lyrics to American Pie, he flogged them for a couple of hundred grand or maybe a million. Well, surely Somewhere Over the Rainbow would be worth.
Well, I think that MGM just didn't really have any foresight. They wanted to make a quick buck. And as well, around the same time, they sold a lot of the memorabilia from various films, but The Wizard of Oz being one of them. And I think the ruby slippers, they fetched something like 10 grand or something like that.
That's it.
You know, that was it. And they, you know, had they actually planned something, they could have, you know, they could have, I think they just wanted to get rid, in terms of the music, they just wanted to get rid of it and free up that building so they could, you know, release the real estate.
Well, this, you being a conductor, this provides, I would have thought, a challenge for you, because how do you tell the viola what to play if you don't have the original score?
Well, the only reason that we're able to do a concert like this, and anybody has ever been able to do a concert like this, is because several really dedicated, really talented musicians over the years have reconstructed all of this music. And they've done it in several ways. Some of them have reconstructed from the fragmentary sort of material that has survived, and they've filled in the blanks from these kind of incomplete scores. And then they've also just sat down with headphones on, listened to the soundtrack and notated literally note by note from ear, from recording. The most famous one conductor who's done this is John Wilson, and he dedicated so much of his career to really detailed reconstructions of these scores. And of course he did them at the BBC proms and everything, and really brought this music back into our consciousness. So the only reason we're able to do that is because people have reconstructed this music.
But that must be an extraordinary challenge, because it isn't like you're sitting down and saying, I am listening to a single instrument and I'm going to infer into it what the score is. You're listening to entire orchestras trying to pick out parts.
Yeah, and also I did a bit of this for this concert for the Wizard of Oz stuff. So I reconstructed, we're doing two numbers from the Wizard of Oz, and I reconstructed those. And it's, I had some material to work off, but it literally is sitting down, listening. And of course, though, they were recorded in 1939, so probably with two microphones. So there's a lot of detail that you just can't hear. So you can maybe hear something going on there, but you're not quite sure what it is. So you just have to kind of guess, or you just have to, you know, you might have, you know, some cues on paper that you can just slot in. But it's a lot of, you know, the first time you listen to it, the second time, the 50th time you listen to it, you hear it. You hear things that you didn't hear the first time. So it's very time consuming, and it's, you kind of have to be a bit obsessive.
I was going to say, labour of love is the phrase that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Now, how good were the original musicians that recorded this? Because I assume, given the studio system and the scale and the money in the 30s and 40s around musicals, particularly MGM's money, they were able to hire the best of the best, were they?
Yeah, they really did. And also at that time, you had an influx of European musicians who were emigrating, you know, from Central Europe. So you had this kind of the best of the classical orchestral musicians from Europe, but then you also had the jazz players of the States who were there. And a lot of this music as well, the orchestras are set up in such a way, and this will be what we're doing on Wednesday. You have an orchestra in front of you, but in the middle of that, you also have basically a jazz band. So you have a rhythm section, you've got your drums, your guitar, you've got pianos, you've got saxophones, and, you know, trumpet players who are really good at playing jazz. So brass players, should I say. And so, yeah, you really did have the best of both worlds there. You had, and of course, it being Hollywood, that was where all the musicians went. And in those times, if you were on a contract in the MGM Studio Orchestra, that was your job. And you'd record all of these amazing scores all day.
Is there any, or was there then, any elitism or condescension from the classical musicians to the jazz or the soundtrack musicians? Is there a sense that it was beneath a high quality musician?
I don't think so then, because, you know, André Previn, who is one of the greatest classical musicians of the 20th century, he was a fantastic conductor and composer. He got his start in MGM age 16. And he was arranging music for, you know, films like Gigi and Silk Stockings in 1956-57. So I don't think there was. I think there was just this sense, I imagine that there was this sense of it's all artistry, whether it's classical music, whether it's musical theatre, whether it's jazz. There, it's kind of, and that's certainly what I feel with this music. It was Kurt Weill who said there's no difference between serious music and light music. There's only two types of music, good music and bad music.
Tell us then, what are the types of songs that you include on the Wednesday's performance?
So we have songs from the biggies. So I suppose The Wizard of Oz, as I said. We've got songs from Singing in the Rain, the title song from Singing in the Rain. We're doing Over the Rainbow as well from Wizard of Oz. We've got songs from High Society, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?, True Love, songs from Annie Get Your Gun. What else do we have? We've got An American in Paris.
What's the one from? Is it Oklahoma that's from Annie Get Your Gun?
Oklahoma is very similar because it's set in the West, but that was actually 20th Century Fox.
Oh, my apologies.
But I actually did a concert last year, Rodgers and Hammerstein, so we did a lot of Oklahoma in that. So it's just great.
Do you have a vocalist?
We've got two. We've got two vocalists. So we have Irish West End star Aoife Mulholland, who is joining us. And then we also have Matt Ford, who is UK sort of really prolific big band and swing singer in the UK. So we're very lucky to have two magnificent soloists with us.
Have you've heard, I don't know how to pronounce his name, the late Hawaiian star who did the version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the ukulele version of it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous.
And that song is just, it's so simple, but it's just, it just gets you right here. It's just an amazing song.
Now, you are conducting.
Yeah.
Is all of the work of conducting done before the performance? Do you rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and a little bit more of this and a little bit more of that so that you could actually just sit in the audience during the thing? Or are you required live? I know this is a complete Philistine question, but I've always...
No. Well, this is a debate that so many musicians have as well. Is the conductor actually necessary? Obviously, I'm slightly biased.
No, I'm saying you're necessary through the process. I'm wondering, is it one of those things where once you get it honed down, a bit like a director in a play, they don't direct each night?
Well, I think, you know, it's still quite live when you get to the stage. When you get to the performance, things can change and things can happen in the performance that don't happen in rehearsal. Something could be just a little bit, there can be a bit of flexibility. And I think that is really necessary for the performance to actually be live. And we have an orchestra of 56 on Wednesday. So when you've got 56 players, like, it is good if there's somebody up the front sort of guiding things and, you know, yeah, I think a conductor is.
Am I right to say, by the way, didn't André Previn do that seminal Morecambe and Wise sketch?
Yes.
Isn't the one of playing all the right notes, just not necessarily in the right order.
And he was a magnificent musician. And one of the musicians a classical musician who really entered the realm of popular culture as well, which I think is always really exciting.
Which there hasn't been many of, I think, since then. It's hard to point in the modern era to classical musicians who've made that crossover.
And I think that's possibly, perhaps there is a bit more of a disconnect between classical music and the audience and popular culture. But classical music is amazing, and it is for everybody, and everybody can enjoy it.
Text saying, hi Anton, where is this concert happening? This is Wednesday in the National Concert Hall.
Yes, this is Wednesday, 8 p.m. in the National Concert Hall. And I think we actually sold out this week, but there are some tickets being released tomorrow. So
just like dynamic pricing, who's selling the tickets?
Well, it's not quite Oasis just yet, but we're not charging as much as Oasis anyway. But there will be some tickets available tomorrow.
Final thing, you given that we're talking about MGM, am I right in saying that the MGM lion was Irish?
Yes, he was. He was born in Dublin Zoo in, I think, something like 1922. And then MGM opened their gates for business in 1924. That's why we're doing this. This is a 100-year celebration. But yes, he was Irish, born in Dublin Zoo.
Does that mean he was born in Dublin Zoo and shipped out to California to do the thing? Or did they come to Dublin Zoo and take a video of him? Video, film? And
I would say it was no expense spared and he was shipped over.
Can I give you my other Hollywood fact?
Oh, please do.
Do you know why frogs all the way around the world will go ribbit, ribbit?
Why?
Because there is a species of frog that lives in the Hollywood Hills that goes ribbit, ribbit. So Foley artists in the 30s recorded it and just used it for all frogs. Almost no frog goes ribbit, ribbit, except one California frog.
Oh my God.
Well, been sitting on that one for a long time. It's a huge relief.
Well, that's great.
Niall, it has been hugely enjoyable to talk to you. And I should say, by the way, your own background, you are graduate of the University for Music and Performing Arts in Vienna and the Royal Irish Academy in Dublin.
Yes.
In other words, you didn't lick it off the rocks.
Well, for every musician, I think it's a long road. There's always a lot of study that's involved. So, but it's lovely when you can just get out there and perform.
And your instrument of choice when you are not conducting, you're a pianist.
I'm a pianist, yeah. So I work a lot with singers and that's sort of my thing. And when I'm not conducting.
Title for the concert?
The Sound of Hollywood.
The Sound of Hollywood this Wednesday. Sold out currently, but there's going to be dynamic pricing releases between now and the concert itself. So there may be a couple more tickets if you would like to go.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
This NFL season, all FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get 3 weeks of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. So if you've got a hunch, you can watch it come to life live. Like a vibe hunch.
I don't like the way the quarterback is warming up. I don't like the way the running back is warming up. I definitely don't like the way the punter is warming up.
Put your hunch to the test this season with FanDuel. All customers bet $5 and get a 3-week free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Plus, new customers bet $5 and get 200 in bonus bets guaranteed. 21 plus and present in North Carolina. New customer offer. First online real money wager only. $5 deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets expiring 7 days after receipt. See terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. NFL Sunday Ticket offer from YouTube and YouTube TV ends 9/22/24. After 3-week free trial, the full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally. Cancel anytime. No refunds. Terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. YouTube TV base plan required to watch YouTube TV. Redemption requires a Google account and current form of payment.